The Pittsburgh Savoy Arts are presenting Sherlock Holmes and the Web of Deceit. It opens July 10th and runs through July 25th. Robert Hockenberry is with us. Hey, Robert.
Morning, Larry.
Hi, and I'd like to introduce you. I have some surprise co-hosts here with me. Moss Brinzer and Sammy Heikkinen, they just graduated from high school. Moss, in particular, I believe is a big fan of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
And I wanted him to stick around to learn more about the play and maybe ask you a question or two. And mm-hmm. Sammy's a big fan of just about anything.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'll let you start, Rob, if you could just tell us a bit about the production. It's not Gilbert and Sullivan, I don't think, right? This is a different, every year the Savoy Arts do something a little bit out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we at the end of the pandemic, we expanded from just the two Gilbert and Sullivans to adding two classical works each year, including a holiday show every year. The show is Sherlock Holmes and the Webs of Deceit. It is an original work based on the canon stories written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. There are five short story collections and four novels, and this uses plot and or character from two of the novels and all five of the short story collections. It's going back to the original way Holmes was written. He is officially the most adapted character in literary history, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. And for our production, we strive to go back to how he was originally characterized, how he originally thought, shedding a lot of the fun nuances, but newer ideas brought by, like, Robert Downey Jr. and Benedict Cumberbatch and all of those modern-day versions, even, you know, the Nigel movies back from the 40s that were very, very popular, still added their own twists and things like, oh, Sherlock Holmes suddenly is in love with Irene Adler, even though the original books clearly wrote him as an asexual character. And it follows, we managed to fit most of the characters in that people would know. You know, Sherlock is there. We actually open shortly after the show opens, he meets Watson for the first time and they get involved, and his landlady, Mrs. Hudson, is there, and the semi-competent Inspector Lestrade is there. And then a bunch of other characters pop in as Sherlock tries to figure out why there is an increase in crime and why he can't figure out so easily what's behind it all.
That sounds super interesting. So you talked about the original characterization of Sherlock Holmes. What do you think are the character traits that you think are the most important to his original characterization?
The fact that he's human. A lot of modern adaptations go with this concept that he has to be quirky, he has to be rude, or he has to be incredibly eccentric. And he has elements of those, but they're not amplified. You know, he is occasionally rude, and when he is rude, he will apologize for it. He does hold a healthy contempt for the niceties of society, and he very clearly is a little bit on the spectrum with that level of intelligence. But he talks to people on a one-on-one level, and when he realizes, aside from Inspector Lestrade, that he's being kind of a jerk with his knowledge, he will dumb it down for them.
That's very, very interesting. I've seen clips of Sherlock Holmes. You mentioned the more modern versions. I think that's the one that I've seen more of. What has been your favorite part of creating this, like, piece of art in a way? Like, what part was it? Script writing? I can't imagine. Costume design must be very interesting for this.
We have a wonderful costumer named Morgan Hunter, who is doing all the heavy lifting in the costume department. The big debate has been over what Sherlock looks like, because the 1940s movies added, you know, the typical cape and deerstalker hat that everyone associates with Sherlock Holmes, but neither of those things was ever mentioned in the original stories. And the idea of Sherlock wearing a deerstalker cap is kind of ridiculous when he's inside London, because you would only wear that literally when you were hunting deer. So why would an incredibly smart person be wearing a country hunting hat when he's in his home in London? So we had a lot of discussions about with Morgan about, you know, the expectation of the audience versus the reality of the characters and where they're at. The fascinating part about adapting it has been seeing how Conan Doyle, so when he created Moriarty, he was, you know, done with the character, but he was able to, like, retroactively seed Moriarty into stuff he had already written, and there are subtle little connections in the novel that tie various characters beyond him to each other in ways that you don't necessarily think of, but it can be a throwaway reference to, oh, we're in this town, oh, that's right, we solved this case over there. So it was kind of fun how it was written to give the reader little clues to reward long-term reading, little one-off hints beyond the whole, hey, can I be smarter than Sherlock? So it was fun to find ways in a stage play to reward the audience for paying attention, so to speak. There are a lot of little, oh, if you're a Holmes fan, we mention the case of the dying detective or whatever, that'll be a throwaway line for the characters, but it's a reference to one of the short stories of the novels. And finding ways to, like Conan Doyle, filter everything together and keep all of the good stuff from the Victorian era while editing out some of the, well, not some of, all of the stuff that wouldn't be acceptable to a modern audience. Doyle was not exactly a great writer of female characters. A lot of his women are eye candy or plot candy. So fleshing those out was fun and interesting. And cutting some of the, he likes to use the British time in India to create a lot of racist caricatures, which were funny to his readers, but we today are well past finding any of that funny. So finding other ways of humor that didn't rely on stereotypes.
This is Rob Hockenberry. You just heard speaking from the Pittsburgh Savoyards. We're talking about Sherlock Holmes and the Web of Deceit, which opens July 10th and runs through the 25th at the Margaret Partey Performing Arts Center in Bellevue. And there's some streaming performances, too. You can learn more at pittsburghsavoyards.org. I'm curious. There are probably thousands and thousands, just regionally, of people who regard themselves as Sherlock Holmes experts. And as you adapted this work and are presenting it, do you feel any pressure to hold true to their expectations, or is it? Can you just sort of let go?
Oh, you never let go. Your audience, that's why we do this. You know, we are telling a story to an audience, and we want the audience to be able to enjoy themselves, maybe educate themselves, but we don't want them to sit there going, well, Sherlock never did this, Watson never did that. So it's a challenge, although an enjoyable challenge, to find that medium of what works to keep the characters true to who these people are expecting them to be, and where can I do a tweak that they will accept and understand why we've done it. A few of the characters have been gender reversed from where they were in the original novels. In the novels, there's a character named Colonel Sebastian Moran, who is the deadliest shot in England. And we decided to make that Sabine Moran, so that it's a woman instead, to give more women options for characters that aren't, as I said, plot candy and nothing more. And so I think for the Sherlock fan, what will be fun is watching and going, oh, I know that. Oh, that's where that comes. And then sitting there going, okay, at intermission, I have to pull up Wikipedia because I recognize that, but I can't remember where I recognize that from.
So you know you're going to an adaptation and you're already sort of programmed to realize there are going to be some differences. Do either of you, Ma, Sammy, have other questions of Rob?
Yeah, so I'm curious. You're talking about sort of making sure that your audience is engaged with the story, especially like as people who like Sherlock Holmes. Because Sherlock Holmes was, you know, written in the 19th century, the characters talk differently from how we do now. I'm wondering how you've navigated writing the sort of language of the books and adapting it into a stage play, and if it's been at all similar to classical works in terms of getting the actors to understand how to speak as these characters that lived centuries before them, or if it's been harder maybe to make something that you know will be readable by your audience, as sort of classical works can often be, you know, difficult to parse as an audience member or as an actor.
That's the tightrope at the crux of any adaptation of something that's more than 50 years old. Part of it is finding outdated terms, recognizing them, and finding something that fits the era that can replace it, or finding things that are so British no one will get it. Like, originally, there's a couple of words for incompetent police that were used that no one in modern-day America is going to understand, but someone in Britain would instantly recognize. So we go with the term bobby, which was appropriate to that era. That's about when it first began used. But we can use it, and an American ear will automatically get, oh, they're talking about a cop. The characters as written were very, very wordy, and no modern audience wants to sit there and listen to Sherlock expound for 7 pages of dialogue straight without a break. So part of the adaptation is taking monologue-y stuff and breaking it up into conversation instead of it just being one person pontificating on and on, finding those words where this particular word or this particular phrase has become too archaic, and finding something that a modern ear will understand, but keeping the syntax of the Victorian style of talking, because that's a big part of it, is not just the word choices, but the word order and the grammar and how it would be much more correct than we've kind of gotten lazy with our language in the last century. So you have to find that balance where it doesn't sound modern to the ear. It's really easy to fall into the trap of, you know, a character shouts, oh boy, and it's like, well, that's not something they really would have said. Education, resource of, you know, looking up Victorian language. There are thankfully 1,000 websites devoted to, was this said at that time? Was that not? So those are a great help just to make sure it sounds to the ear like it's still that period. And then working through with the actors on, you may be used to this phrase, here's what it is and here's why. Like, rather than just saying, say it this way, explaining to them, well, in this time period, that's what their thought process would have been. You know, they would have spent a lot more time as an educated character understanding grammar and English, whereas, you know, your street thugs who have never had an education, well, then they can talk a little more loosely because they would have never been taught.
What a great question and answer. Sammy, anything else you wanted to mention to Rob?
I would say, before, when it screens, what do you think the audience is going to appreciate most out of the play? Or what do you want them to think or say once they finally get up and leave?
My main goal is that they walk out with an appreciation of a piece of classic literature, with a desire to read the original works to see how close it is. Obviously, they're going to be like, well, this is not what I'm used to in Sherlock for aspects of it. And if we've done our job, they might just be inspired to go back and read one of the short stories to find out, oh, that was a modern take, or was that this author's take? And again, get them back to the source material.
Great questions. I want to thank Rob for being with us. You can learn more at pittsburghsavoyards.org. The program Sherlock Holmes and the Web of Deceit, I almost said Death of Deceit, opens July 10th and runs through July 25th. Rob, thank you for being with us. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just to mention that we have double cast virtually every character in the show, and both casts are phenomenal, but are bringing their own nice little tweaks to the show. So it's definitely something worth possibly checking out twice.
Twice the reason. Great. Thanks so much, Rob. And thank you to Moss as Sammy for being with us today. You added a lot by asking those questions. Thanks for staying over a little bit. And congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
You bet.